Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon. Conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andyscrolls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andyscrolls. Sign up today. A leopard doesn't change its spots, which is why I don't wear animal print. Dumbass.
You can't be extra when you're already everything.
Oh, I thought we were going to do into some like extraordinary. You took me on a path.
A journey.
Words.
Uh-huh. It's been. It's like that's a season two tagline when you're on the bubble.
Yes. And you guys, we're ready to pop a couple because shit is going down. Let's just say we had like a little bit of a pre-show. Things are happening. My life is chaos. And I'm so excited for today's guest, a return guest to the People's Couch, to help bring my chaos, help add some sort of connection to it all because I'm feeling extra wild. You know him as actor, producer, and director. Check out the films he produced and starred in, A Very Sordid Wedding and Southern Baptist Sissies, both streaming on Amazon. And of course, one of or rather the star, the center couch star of the People's Couch. Welcome back to the People's Couch, Emerson Collins. Emerson, how are you?
Oh, I'm so good. I'm so excited to be here. There's so many fun things to talk about.
We just listen, no spoilers of anything ever, but I just need to say that, guys, I will be doing a Patreon about the Sex and the City reboot, and there's just a lot going on. There's a lot going on there. I need to discuss it at length, but I won't talk about it. No spoilers here.
None. And just like that, there was so much to talk about.
The name of this episode, and which, P.S., I want to like name someone. I was having a conversation with someone who's like, it's really important to name the episodes, and I'm like, it's episode 272. You want me to do two? I can't do it.
No.
I couldn't try. But that would be the name of this week's ep.
I couldn't try would be, that's the name of the episode. I couldn't try. I always think of Mark Cherry naming all of the Desperate Housewives episodes after Sondheim lyrics. And I think no one should ever try to name episodes ever again. Like that and the Friends, the one where, like, why would you bother? It's episode 104, 1742, whatever.
Right? It's just tough.
It's episode tough. The next one.
It's episode This Is Now, Stay in the Moment. Thank you so much, I have to say.
Yes.
So listen, Emerson Collins, I'm in New York. You're in LA.
I'm in LA.
How are you? How are we feeling? How are we feeling about Housewives life? Friday, which allegedly is.
You know, actually fine. I also feel like the last time I was here, I definitely leaned way hard into my, like, I'm feeling earnest and I've had a mental health crisis and there's lots going on. I mean, there's still lots going on, but I'm in a decent place. I directed and did a stage adaptation of my last movie, A Very Sort of Wedding in Dallas in September and October, which is very thrilling to be back on a stage and to do our piece that way. But I like eat, pray, drove my way across America on my way back from Dallas.
Oh my God.
Well, because I drove there because rental cars are expensive. And so I knew that I was headed for a life crisis because there was no work planned after that. So I like went to the Grand Canyon to watch the sunrise and like found a spot by myself. It was like 30 degrees. There's like snow on the ground to like cry and sing show tunes at the Grand Canyon. So we're like moving through life at the moment.
First off, so thrilled to hear you say you're moving through it. Uh-huh, love that. Uh-huh. Love that journey for you. Love the openness and vulnerability, even discussing past openness and vulnerability. Have to ask, and I know this is the dumbest question, but like Grand Canyon, how was it? You know, like, is it worth it? I know it's worth it. I know it's like amazing. But like, truly, what is that experience like?
I had been before we went as a family, as kids. And so did the Painted Desert and the Petrified Forest. But I was very feeling like, oh, I'm by myself. I want to be in nature. And the sort of awe and majesty of it all is as cheesy as it could be. There is something about remembering that all your stuff is kind of small when you stare at something that took like tens of thousands of years of this river just like running to make this giant hole in the ground. It's like, it puts perspective on it a little bit. It is stunning. It really is. If you enjoy anything about being outdoors, and the great thing is you don't have to actually hike. You ride a little tram to your spot, you look down at it and you go, oh, yay. And then you walk back.
I mean, I love that. I do have to say, I guess I feel a little iffy about it because I remember I went on a family vacation in the sixth grade, and I'm not going to say I'm a moron, but my parents were like, do you want to go horseback riding down a crater? And they showed me a photo, like a brochure of people horseback riding on a beach. And I was like, oh, wow, that crater seems great. And we showed up and there are photos of me. People were on their honeymoon with us, hysterically screaming for hours. The horse was like, I might just jump for it.
Yes.
Like, this is not worth it for me. Like, screaming all the way down. I have a perilous fear of heights, and also like science or whatever has never been my strong suit. So I associated craters with, you showed me a photo of a beach. I'm going to assume that is what
we're doing
is.
Yeah, you're like, you're in like sixth grade imagining a romance cover novel. And they're like, no, we're driving like straight down on a horse that's like not like this, like ready to end it all. So I get that. That seems like a fair misrepresentation of the experience you were going to have.
Thank you. There are literally photos of me screaming against a crater. I screamed. People were on like romantic. And then there's motherfucking Sarah screaming on her poor, like just absolutely desperate to be anywhere else but their horse. It was a moment.
In those moments, I love to imagine the other person's story, right? Like that couple tells the story of their honeymoon very differently. They were like, and we were going on a horseback ride and it was like, you know, going to be romantic and we're going down the crater and we're in nature. And this demon child, 11-year-old, 100%. Screamed the entire way.
And P.S., I would be the exact same way now. I don't fuck with heights. Like, when I went to L.A., it had to take me a second trip to do the fucking tram thing to the Getty.
Oh, yeah,
it the Villa or the Center? Because I don't want to, the Center, because I don't want to go on a trip. I don't want to go against a hill thing.
I'm going to go ahead and say don't go to the Grand Canyon. It's a giant hole in the ground. There's viewing platforms. But like, I had several spots. I found this little like rock outcropping. Like literally I was doing some version of like the Titanic singing Aida, like all alone. But there was like 3 feet and then like a perilous drop. So I would say maybe it's a picture place for you. Look at the photos. They're lovely.
Like if I could drive there, but stay back, like I've walked up the top, but it's not really like the top because the very top you have to take an elevator to the top of the Eiffel Tower. There is video saved on my highlights because I was like, you're gonna do this. And the Eiffel Tower shakes and there were children prancing in front of me. And I was like, oh, these are like Olympic children. These are like special skilled children.
Yes.
Because what I am experiencing, this absolute nightmare, is what is normal. Because it fucking, heights are scary.
Yeah.
Scary.
I didn't used to be scared of heights. Like one of my favorite things traveling has always been go to the top of the highest thing and like look at the view and see the town and see the city. And I don't know what age I was at, but I think there was, when you pass that age where you realize mortality is a thing. You know, like 20, you don't think you're going to die. You don't think you could die.
Well, I had that apparently from anything. At 10, so I don't know.
You were ahead of the curve. You were just like aware. I would say don't go to the Grand Canyon then. But I finished crying, drove my way home, and here we are. Spoiler alert, the end.
I mean, also spoiler alert, I got invited to this thing in New York on next week. I'll put it on social, mostly as a protective mechanism. And it's some sort of immersive experience that involves it involves some height. And I have Googled it. I've tried to look for video, but there's just video of people talking about how great it is. And I'm going with a friend because I feel like that will apply the right amount of peer pressure for me not to like truly scream in front of like invited guests. But it's possible. It might also happen.
A documentarian to ensure there's footage for the rest of us to enjoy you screaming at the heights involved immersive experience.
I mean,
a win-win for the rest of us.
The video of me screaming, that could be my opportunity to be a bartender and watch what happens.
Oh my
gosh.
Maybe
they just do one of those video things. And it's like, Sarah wanted to be here, but she found herself some heights. She found herself some heights.
Tell my story.
I mean, like Lin-Manuel's the other guest in one of the chairs. He's like, oh, I know heights. Listen, Emerson Collins, we could talk about a crater, a canyon,
all day long,
whatever. Or we could talk about the climb to the mountaintop.
Yes.
Which has been, I think, in my humble opinion, the comeback of comebacks, Orange County.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I mean, this like renaissance, the Bravo renaissance, you know, we were all worried mid-pandemic that like everything was falling apart. The OGs, the franchises, craters toppling. I am so excited to watch everything right now. I mean, Heather Dubrow, the return of Heather Dubrow. Like, not in the history of Housewives has anybody been given such a deserved queen. I still keep thinking about the first 4 minutes of the premiere of the season where they just shot her walking through her house.
Click, clack.
For clearly an hour because of the number of angles that we did it and thought, yes, thank you and welcome. Someone who always understands the assignment and it has only gotten better from there. I mean, off the rails already.
I mean, I have to say, having not watched last season, I'm not going to say this. We're not talking like canon best seasons of all time. What I am saying is I have missed Orange County, and Orange County is back. It's not that it feels like it's back. This isn't science class. Like, but and yet maybe it is, because I feel like the formula is real and has been proven. So Orange County, the content is here.
Yes.
The cast is possibly weird, but something is working out. The edit is right.
It's also, it's weird in the right way. You know, the issue, you know, the issue, like, yes, it fell apart and whatever, but like the Vicky of it all, like that really was so necessary. And this is demonstrating that that was the right decision and they just had the wrong people after it. Because I love everything about it. Like, Heather is a queen bee, always has been a queen bee. Emily and Gina have blossomed and flowered as the, like, comedic duo. You know, it's like every, I think of all the musicals that always have, like, the comedic duo on the side, you know, like, that are, like, the Greek chorus, the commentary that are making you giggle. Like, the way that Emily has blossomed into this hilarious sidekick of the show, and they, it was proved why they were so flattened by the, like, Vicky, Tamara, Shannon, the Tres Amigas of it all. Like, we never got to really explore them. And having the space to do that, I love them so much. They make me laugh. I don't know what's going to happen. Emily, like, losing her mind and running around Heather's house and, like, yelling at this Nicole person and then running out of the house and going back into the house. That mausoleum line, I was like, this is what I come to Housewives for. How do I get out of this mausoleum? Like...
I mean, you're right. And also the question of, we didn't have the space to really explore or understand these women. I don't think that they had the space to explore themselves.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure that this was always there. I think that this has been developed. And what I heard about last season was that Gina had a great last season. And I think that was the first time that she maybe really felt like the audience was on her side, which made her feel more comfortable blossoming, more comfortable feeling like, you know what, I actually am good at this. Maybe I'm funny. Maybe I'm vulnerable. Maybe I'm smart. Like, I see some... no insult to either party, and me saying no insult is not meant to be an insult, but like there's some sort of connection here with like with what's happening with Gina on OC and Whitney Rose, where we didn't know that this is happening, but like Whitney seems to know a fucking ton about business and law in a way that doesn't feel researched. It feels like this is a passion, and with Gina, maybe her passion is being great.
Yes. Well, it feels like Gina definitely went through like a several very large personal life crises that we were experiencing. But I think who we're seeing of them on the show now is probably closer to who Emily and Gina were like in life pre-crisis. Like, I feel like we're getting a much more authentic, well-rounded representation of them, because Emily's always come off as extremely intelligent to me and held back, pulled back from the weight of the big stars of OC when she first joined. And I just like seeing them be free to react however they react. And that's giving exciting and surprising new things. And that coupled with the Shannon Heather dynamic, you know, it's like they're like the ring, the big stars in the boxing ring. And then these two are like the sidekicks, like having their big journey. It is, there's so much weight between Heather and Shannon. And I can't believe, it's another one of those like gifts of the universe, that Gina and Emily and Shannon had that big dinner the night before and ran into Heather before their first filming date, so that there was all this like pre-work that didn't come in like, oh, that set up that first scene so well. And then this backstory that no one could have planned, that Shannon definitely remembers this Nicole person from pre-life. I mean, they could not have planned this better, and it's made the launch of all of it just amazing. I cannot wait every moment to see what's happening next.
And there were so many twists and turns and even the reveals. And I don't know if Gina discussed the whole her husband having invited her to a cookout at his, like, the woman he was having an affairs with house. I don't know if that came up last season because I haven't watched it, but that was a huge reveal for me. There are so many layers of like, there's a genuine reason why this person was triggered, and it took them having to explain the situation and like, you know, the mission of AG, you know, normalize changing your mind based on new information.
Yes.
I think that was happening a lot, and also normalize changing your mind based on the reaction of the person you're discussing or talking to, you know, was huge. But I do just have to say, I do have to say, because I need to be honest to myself on my spiritual journey.
And to everyone listening, yes.
And to everyone listening, I almost feel emotional, but that is also because, you know.
Life.
Hormones. Uh-huh. And yes. This week has been intense. Yes. That I am nervous, maybe not as nervous as I was before watching this episode, but I am ever so slightly nervous about my love, my queen, my friend, my confidant, my admirer, my comedy legend, my like giggle joke, but also stunned and very self-sabotagey, my queen, my nine lemons and a bull, the stan.
Yes.
The Shan for whom I stand.
Yes.
You know, like the stan. She doesn't maybe stand for herself, but I stand double as much, so it works out.
Yes.
I'm just a little nervous. Yes. I have an affection for her. We have a history together in my mind.
Yes.
And I'm just a little nervous for Shan. I'm a little nervous for Shan.
I think that is well-founded.
Thank you. Thank
because... you. I unfortunately think that we are going to get great experience out of the journey that Shannon is about to go on, because I will tell you that Shannon sort of wandering alone around Heather's house between the multiple scenes happening with the giant hair story that was happening as it was for this particular party, I thought, this icon of emotional roller coaster adventures, nothing brings me more joy than montages of Shannon running away from new people. I like feel like that's such a truthful human experience. And I do think that the miscalculation of not being the one to go tell Heather immediately, with Heather being who Heather is, they showed the flashback to that scene of like the original issue between the Bedores and the and the Dubrows. I think that Heather being who Heather is, that the season-long journey between the two of them is about to be painful for the Shan, Stan, and all of us. I think that's right.
And it's like Shan both gets too much credit and not enough.
Agreed.
We forget that Shannon has some stuff that Shannon is working on,
yes,
or we are working on more often on her behalf.
Yes.
And, you know, the big question looms. I'm going to ask you. Do you think that Shannon strategized telling Gina and Emily that Nicole, sued Dr. Dubrow, or because that's what what Gina and Emily were hypothesizing very loudly, aggressively.
Yeah.
And, you know, we sort of ended in a weird spot.
I know that we ended with them, like, looking at it that way. And I get that that's how the shows work and everyone's, you know, aware of those things. I imagine the night at, wait, what's that place that they were at? And I laughed because...
No, oh, The Quiet Woman?
No, Javier's. Javier's.
Oh, okay, great.
Which, by the way, I just did two shows with the Skivvies at the Laguna Beach Playhouse. And we drove past Javier's on our way back up. Like, Orange County is important to me in the way that, like, several years ago, we drove down to Orange County just to have dinner at The Quiet Woman for
love
a friend's
that.
Birthday. Y'all, it's like an hour, easily an hour and a half drive from
Worth
Los Angeles.
Worth it. Could be six, would still not be anywhere near far enough.
And we fully recreated the Kelly Dodd, like, blowing on the window behind Peggy as Peggy, like, recreated. And Shannon showed up to celebrate her birthday while we were there. It was the greatest universe saying, like, thank you for being a fan. We were sitting there, and our waiter was obviously knew why we were there, and he was like, Shannon's on her way in. She's celebrating her birthday. So we got our dessert birthday at the same time as she got hers, two tables away. Sarah, it was such an important night in my life.
Wait, not to be psycho, but was that day March 26th? Because Shannon is born the day before I was. Both of these are holy days, you guys. Holy days in the calendar.
Yeah, it had to be. I don't.
Yeah, my birthday, March 27. She's 26. And I share a birthday with Vicky, by the way. Sidebar. Wish I could exchange.
Wait,
that.
Your birthday is March 27th? So is Blake.
Yeah, I'm a strong Aries.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Birthday twins.
Yeah, literally. But that's why we were there. That's why we went.
Did you say anything to her?
No, we didn't. Anything? But I do have a photo of me with the back of Shannon's hair in the doorway while I'm recreating Kelly Dodd blowing on the window for the side-by-side.
Okay, We're going to need you to post that one this episode.
Anyway.
We're going to need you to post it.
So we drove past Javier's, which is where they were. But no, I think it was like Margarita Shan was definitely just like telling stories. I think maybe later she had time to think, do I want to be the one to tell Heather? Or like, I honestly think Shannon was nervous. I think Shannon was worried about her and Heather. Like when you bring in another mm-hmm. big personality, I watched those scenes and I really thought I saw Shannon's heart sort of break, that she thought there was a new opportunity for her and Heather. I felt like her apology was very genuine. It felt like that thing when you make yourself a little bit small because it's not, I felt like she could see in that moment the rest of the season playing out as well. And I think part of her hope with Vicky and Tamara gone, she and Heather could team up, be the strong central figures of this new season. And when Heather stood there and said, I'm disappointed in you. And Heather is such an icon with word. Like her word choice is always exacting and specific. Like, I feel like Shannon's heart broke going, okay, it's not going to be that. And I don't know what it's going to be, but oh my gosh, this is going to be hard.
I mean, and also Heather, her words are, you know, spot on and also intentionally cutting.
Yes.
So like, I think the importance of the construct of this week's episode was the fact that like, you're not necessarily on Heather's side.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like she is not deserving of 100% blind empathy. There is something else at play. And that's not just because she's married to Terry Dubrow. Like and that is important.
Yeah.
It's important to have someone that you're like, ooh, I sort of disagree with how you're handling this. Or I like feel kind of weird, that we want those layers.
Yes.
We want to see someone making decisions, saying some shitty stuff to Gina, and then recognizing, oh, I maybe feel differently now. Like,
yes,
all of that is important. Like, that is important. We don't want there to be such an obvious,
yes,
you know,
oh, yeah.
I'm not saying this in reference to Heather, but such an obvious, like, respect your villains because they add blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like we want to see complicated people doing complicated things.
Well, and also we've talked about it before. I think even here, I don't like using villains anyway. I like using antagonists because all of us in life are the villain to someone, whether we intend to be or not. So it's all perspective. And I use the weirdest example. My adolescence was weird. I was a skinny gay kid in Texas where if you don't play football, you're not a person. And I have a very good friend who we're both out now. And he remembers in middle school, like being terrified of like my academic success. And all I remember at that time was being like terrified of like the big guys around me. You know, like we are all the villain in someone's story. Spoiler alert. You know, so I just don't like that word related to imperfect people, which is why we love watching this anyway. I love that the foils here are, Heather is so calculated in every moment of everything. And the best is when the rug gets pulled out from under her calculation, which we saw with this news this episode. And Shannon is so, most of the time, unfiltered, uncalculated. She can't help but like blurt things and things happen and she gives authentic reactions. And I just think that pairing is creating wonderful television for all of us. And it's not a right or wrong. It's just how we each move through the world.
First off, love that pivot, that use of language. Love that. Not sure I can like hold to it,
but
I think that's incredibly nuanced and incredibly sensitive because people like to say like, I hate this person or this housewife is stupid. And it's like, they're actually not.
Right.
You know, like you can dislike someone, hates that. I actually disagree with much less. The idea that some of these women, the way that they're sometimes discussed as being stupid, as not being smart, as being weak is frustrating.
Yeah.
It's frustrating to hear women discussed in that way, knowing how emotionally and vulnerably, how brave they are and courageous to be on a show like this.
Yes.
You know you're going to get shit on.
And I always try to be really careful too, because like as a man, as a fan, even as a gay man, like keeping our language and talking about how people are behaving in a moment rather than a permanent Carrick decision. You know, you can say this person is weak in this moment. This was a stupid decision that doesn't paint someone in life with like the brush of like, you're a moron, all that, you know, keeping it focused on incidents rather than character traits keeps us in a space that's more fun to discuss, I think.
I totally agree. And I also think it is sometimes also connected to character traits.
Yeah.
Like in the sense of, listen, Shannon is Shannon.
She is.
You know, there are favorite housewives and spiritual housewives.
Yes.
There are housewives you just fucking love.
Yes.
And housewives you are connected with.
Yes.
Sometimes because of the difficulties and complications.
Yeah.
And Shannon is trusting.
Yeah.
to a point that is incredibly counterproductive.
Yes.
And I think she does it because she leads from a broken place.
Yep.
You know, she has discussed her difficulties, her personal difficulties, as she has colorized them with her body and self-esteem through that. We've seen that journey.
Yep.
I think everyone on the planet can empathize with that in some way, with not feeling happy.
Yes.
With the person you look at in the mirror and how you feel like that affects the way other people judge you.
Yes.
And we've seen other people judge her for it and they've used it and whatever. And with Shan, hashtag for whom I stand.
Yes.
There is a way that I think she reveals information that's twofold. It could be coming from drinking too much.
I feel like we've seen that. Yes.
Something's
happening
there that maybe we can talk about, maybe not.
Uh-huh.
There's that where you feel very open and vulnerable and you're not necessarily totally in control of your impulses.
Yes.
It's like a little bit of an impulse control sitch. And then the other is because she is going out of her way to assume that everyone she interacts with has good intentions.
Yeah.
And when she finds out that people are people, or maybe they don't agree with the way the information or whatever, I think she spirals. And I don't know how to solve that for her.
Yeah.
Because I love that. I love her so much. Like, I want us to solve
this.
And I just don't know how. I just don't know how.
I also think occasionally she falls into the trap of, like, learning too much at the feet of Tamara. You know, who made great television by intentionally instigating. I think that sometimes makes her wary of information. And I think she learned that sometimes information will be used in a way that you can't know in advance of, that makes her wary too. Because I feel like if she just gone to Heather and said, like, hey, this, you know, this, do you know this? Like, let the chips fall where they may. I think she was almost so afraid of the possible result that, like, the buffer in between, and it all blew up in her face. And I thought it was interesting, Heather's journey, Heather running up the stairs and whatever happened up the stairs.
Yeah, however long that took.
I think that was way longer, because the way the women, like the downstairs scenes and like the next morning Gina talking about, I was there forever. I think big conversations happened up there, because I always go back to Heather and the, like, the bus in Ireland that night. That is always why I feel like she finally was like, I'm leaving the show, because the curtain was pulled back a little bit when we all thought we were not on camera. I think she ran up the stairs and went, absolutely not. I said I was coming back under these terms. I don't like surprises, da-da-da-da. Whatever was said that brought them back downstairs to do the, like, incredibly uncomfortable, like, scene with Nicole where we, like, laughed a little too big, a little too hard. I think everyone knew big conversations happened right there. And I love that I didn't totally agree with Heather's, like, choice to blame Shannon in that moment. Like, where she landed with that was very interesting and surprising. Do you know what I mean? Like, not giving Shannon the space to be like, I wish you'd just come to me, because me and my friend are fine. I want to take in good faith that you were concerned for me, but we have a history I'm uncomfortable with. It was just very interesting and compelling.
I mean, I totally hear you. And I also think when it comes to the benefit of the doubt, how does that work within the construct of Housewives specific reality TV?
Yeah.
Because Shannon has been on this show.
Yeah.
This is me talking hard to Shannon, aka aspects of myself.
Yeah.
Shannon has been on TV for too long to think that the night before filming, she can be like, hey, this tertiary character who they're maybe trying out to be a housewife, which we know doesn't work out, or like whatever, turns out that there was like a lawsuit and shit's going down, and P.S. we're going to film with them both tomorrow at the Dubrows at the Porta Cachere or whatever the fuck it's called. Like, ma'am, like, how, why do you think that this secret is really going to be kept regardless of the people getting the information saying, like, pinky promise? Ma'am, we're too smart for this, Shan. We're too smart.
Also, even in our conversation, speaking of changing our minds, I forgot that Nicole was, like, in consideration to really be a housewife, because
I think she got, like, fired or something.
Yeah, as much as I'm, like, a super fan stan, I, like, forget stuff all the time. Like, I, like, watch stuff, I remember, but I don't remember what season anything happened in, blah, blah. I forgot that that was I. And I absolutely think now she remembered and did not like this woman from like previous life, whatever. And she definitely set this bomb for like Gina and Emily to carry, thinking it would make Heather blow up because she knows how Heather is about like being in control of situations.
Wait, who's the she? Shan or Nicole?
Shannon. Oh, no. Oh, okay, got it. No, I think you're right. Okay. I forgot Nicole was in consideration to be a wife. I forgot that she wasn't a rando friend. Oh, no. Yeah, she definitely went, oh, I don't like her and I'm going to let Heather take care of it. And then it didn't go the way she thought it was going to go.
You think Shannon didn't like Nicole?
Well, because the way she described that was like this woman that I used to do drop off with that like dated Kid Rock. Like the way she described her seemed like she was not a fan when they knew each other back at drop off was my perception. Did you not get that?
I mean, I don't think you're wrong. I think definitely like the Kid Rock stuff was weird. I could see her having a little like classist, elitist, like WASP energy there. I totally hear you there. But I don't think the reveal had anything to do with Nicole. I think the reveal had to do with like, I have crazy tea and I'm going to share it with you guys. I don't think it was in any way to seek revenge for Nicole. I would think if there was anyone to seek revenge on, it would be, as the Dubrows said, them directly, which I don't think Shannon... I don't know what Shannon was doing. I don't think Shannon is a good enough producer.
Yes, I think,
she would
correct.
Try, this would happen. Correct. But like, I don't think that what Gina and Emily were saying initially about Shannon is doing this to fuck with you, I don't think that was true. But I also cannot explain why she would say this allegedly 12 hours before. It's not, ma'am.
Not a good producer. Yeah.
And also, why did Nicole tell her? Nicole was friends with Heather for 6 years. That's insane to me. We need to have that conversation because that's like wildly crazy to not bring it up, regardless of trauma. I'm sorry. That's a little tough.
I also feel like, though, I think that's one of those, there's a tenuous connection that we're making seem like is bigger. I think we've, like, known of each other. Because the one, wasn't the one photo they showed of them, like, the two of them at opposite ends of a giant group photo? Like, I feel like that was in the, oh, we know each other around town, but sure, that's enough of a connection. I feel like it's like, oh, I sort of know Heather. These other women all awkwardly know Bronwyn. Sorry, she's gone. But that's fine. I just feel like it was like that, I think, was the weird, we've known each other 6 years, but Terry was like, wait, who are you? Kind of, you've known my wife for a while. I feel like we made a tenuous connection seem larger, which made it seem weirder that this hadn't come up. Also, I don't tell somebody I sued you. We're gonna be on a show together. I mean,
Are you kidding?
I so relate to them, but also, how did Nicole think this was gonna go? I don't know how she thought this was never going to come up. Like, that feels like a Nicole should have said, hi, we need to talk now that we're doing a show together. I've never brought this up because we've done really well and bygones are bygones and this is a mistake I made when I was young. Nicole needed to say this and then let whatever happened happen.
And you know what? I'm going to walk back what I just said about like how insane is it not to say, because obviously there was such a discomfort from her reveal. She felt ashamed by it. We have no idea of the circumstances. She said something about her lawyer. Yes. She was a young woman.
Manipulating her. Yes.
Obviously, though, something did go very wrong because she said it took 4.5 years or something to deal with. That is not an insubstantial amount of time.
Right.
And while malpractice lawsuits or whatever you want to call them against any kind of medical provider, let alone plastic surgeon, while those are not necessarily uncommon, what we're talking about here seems like something that we need to get maybe some clarity on that we probably never will because it's being so quickly swept under the rug. But like, I do understand from her perspective, let's say this thing happened in your 20s, then you meet this woman 10, 15 years later, how much later, you know, I don't know, but and you get along with her or you know each other socially, I could understand her. I'm completely changing course. I could understand her being anxious about wanting to reveal that information because you don't want this person to judge you. You don't want to be cut out of the social groups. You feel weird about the situation itself. It got resolved at some point. I actually do understand that.
Yes.
And I have changed course in the last 120 seconds. All that said, when did she tell Shannon? You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, when did that
Right. Like, was this acid drop-off?
The connecting of the dots.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, why did Shannon have this information? Like, how close were y'all once upon a time in the Pam Anderson mm-hmm. lookalike years that you, like, shared this information with her at that time or shared it with someone and it went around the drop-off group? But that said, I could not show up. I mean, my anxiety, I take pills for anxiety. I can't even imagine showing up to film with a person with that big a secret. I mean, please don't hold me accountable for any of my early 20s either. Like the horrifying decisions, the terrible way I was to people, the things I was working through. But I also couldn't show up to shoot on a show with a person related to a terrible decision in my 20s. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I would be physically vibrating. I would be so anxious, like, to shoot with this person, even if I'd been friends with them for 6 years. I mean, bravo to her for walking into the scenes with this, like, sitting back there. I could not.
Yeah, and also everyone is getting blamed for this. Shannon is getting blamed for sharing the information. Nicole is getting blamed for initially, at some point, in whatever capacity, suing Terry or his, you know, medical practice, whatever that was. Everyone is getting blamed, but, like, we're not really talking about, like, why Terry was sued. So it's a weird...
Yeah.
It's just this weird vibe where it's, like, pass the blame. And I get that from Heather's perspective through the lens of, like... This isn't a normal situation. Cameras are covering this, so it's going to be discussed, and I don't want that to happen. I want to protect my family, but, like, also, it just it does not feel anywhere near as nefarious as what it was initially supposed by Emily and Gina.
Yeah.
Understandably so.
Right.
Considering. Regarding Shan, but also there is some stuff with Nicole that I just need to further understand.
Yeah, and unfortunately I feel like we're not going to get it. I mean, it feels like this was like, and we closed the book on this and Heather said it, we are moving on to the next scenes, so I don't know what that we're going to get much further resolution on this. I feel like this was a part of the we went upstairs and the cameras went down conversations were related to this is my assumption based on nothing.
Do we think that production knew? They had to have known. Did they not know?
I don't know. I don't know how they would have. I mean, I don't know how they could know specifically about the lawsuit if it hadn't come up. Because there's a level of, when people say like, oh, I can't believe production companies didn't research this person. No matter what kind of background searches you do on people, you cannot find everything there is out there on people. So unless Nicole revealed this in her, interview, you know, consideration process, I bet this was like a gold mine dropped in the laps of people like clapping behind the monitors as this came up.
So no disrespect to Nicole, but like this was essentially luck.
I mean, yeah, unless because I can't if Nicole maybe oh yeah I don't know. I mean, if I were Nicole, I don't know how you would consider it. But if she didn't know Heather was one of the wives, I don't know how much they all know about who's in consideration until they get ready to start. And so would she have volunteered? Oh, by the way, I'm in consideration for your show. And a decade ago, I sued a former housewife, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, maybe 2 decades ago.
Right.
I think we're talking like 15, 20 years maybe.
Yeah.
I don't actually know. Math is hard. But again, it's like science.
It led to a great $36,000 party.
And another reason why that she was upstairs, she was in the Dubrow attic or whatever for hundreds of years because there's no other reason why dinner wasn't served.
I still can't get past that. Like, I'm sorry. If I show up at your house, I don't care who yelled at who on a sofa. I'm going to eat your $36,000 meal. You are going to bring me that Wagyu beef to my plate. I'm going to go. If I were Gina or Emily, I would have walked to the table and said, no. You made personalized whatever chopstick gift sets or whatever were on. I'm going to sit down and use this and take it. Can y'all stop yelling for a minute? Let's eat dinner.
How many people? I thought she said at one point she had 11 there, right? Because then she was joking, bring it down to 10 to take Shan out of the equation.
Correct. Which
Heather will talk about that.
Uh-huh.
So 10 people, $10,000. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
For the food.
Yeah.
Plus 5 for the booze and then the rest on decor. So about $20,000 on decor and favors.
Yeah.
Which, considering the scale of her house, I assume every party, every event.
Yes.
This is the thing. Like, it's when you spend a bajillion dollars creating a Ritz-Carlton from Vail.
Yes.
Like, this industrial complex.
Correct.
Every party you throw is going to have to meet that scale, regardless of how many people attend.
Yes, because you can't, like, it can't, the house cannot dwarf the function. So you are like, the conspicuous consumption is back and I'm grateful. Like, this is the nonsense I come for. Well, can I make an incredibly insane left turn from this episode?
Welcome.
Okay. Emily and Shane's conversation about faith was the most authentic representation I can ever remember of grown-ups having a real conversation about what faith means to them in the context of Housewives. No disrespects to Tamra's, you know, rededication or to Jesus jugs. But like the way that they had an actual grown-up conversation about like their different perspectives on faith, what Shane's means to him, what Emily perceived about it through what they went through with him being ill, and the space she wants to give her children to explore a faith journey, I very weirdly was all but applauding my television. I thought that is such a grown-up representation of the big life questions we ask, whether you're a person of a particular faith or not. When I look across the Housewives, right? Like the bonkers things happening with Mary and her church, the weird things about Mormon leaving and coming and going over there. We've certainly had people of faith on Housewives mention their faith related to functions, but the actual sort of spiritual questions and Emily being very open about being unsure of her space in it and her kids' journey, I thought it was the best, most honest, unproduced for television discussion of faith I've seen on Housewives. And I just loved that as a color we've never seen before. That's very real for very many people's lives. And it was such a small thing, but the truthfulness of it really hit me in the midst of all the like hilarious bonkers things we love to watch on Housewives. Did you notice?
No, I'm so glad you brought it up. I totally agree with you. And I think it's a conversation around curiosity, faith, religion, community, structure, a sense of belonging, a sense of quote unquote normalcy in the idea that this person believes this thing. And I do feel like so many people believe it. And yet I was not brought up that way or I just don't know how to develop the skill set required in which to learn how to feel this way for whatever reason. I thought it was so incredibly interesting, just like the simplest way of saying, you know, essentially, how do you believe in God? Not do you believe in God, but like, what are the tools that were ingrained in you that you continue to develop and like tone? Because I don't know how to do that. And I don't want my daughter to feel lost. And the way that her daughter feels connection to her stepsisters through this, it was so uncritical. It was so vulnerable. I so really appreciated her questions and feeling and Shane's responses.
And also,
I mean, there's something about Shane. There's something about Shane.
Well, it's funny.
I loved it.
It's funny too, because particularly with the way, like, his journey with the fans and the show has definitely been an interesting one. You know, I thought it's clear that there's a sardonic aspect to their relationship that when they were first introduced just seemed hateful, that I feel like now we're seeing is more of whether you agree or disagree is part of their banter. And to see the way in which that conversation flipped on its head and it was suddenly very sincere between them demonstrated something about that to me. But I just feel like we've seen so much performative versions of various kinds of faith on Housewives. A lot of the trappings, that's why a lot of people are turned off by various religions, is the way in which people wield them as weapons or performatively do them in order to judge someone else. This just felt like such a centered, honest conversation about questioning and sharing that I think is some of the best of why people adhere to various faiths. And it came as such a shock. I wanted to really like point it up as a unique thing in our canon. Also gave me an insight into their relationship that we haven't seen about where and how it does work for them.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that's a great point. And I also think from an energetic perspective, adding in the element of production, I think that what we have experienced with Shane is a reaction to discomfort with being on reality TV.
100%.
And also a discomfort with being emotional, vulnerable, understanding his wife's pain, the difficulties with the that like – baby box yes. thing that they had. Like, there's been, I think if that's what I'm like barely remembering at this point, but just the idea, because it's been a while since I've watched Orange County.
Yep.
It's with Shane, I think there has been a huge critical reaction, some of that deserved,
yeah.
to the behavior we've seen on the show. And that's because, you know, his idea of partnership, their idea of marriage, how it all began is sort of strange to a number of people. He like proposed over AIM.
Instant Messenger.
Whatever,
yeah.
Chat. Very, like,
yes.
Not to say I know what AIM is, but I've been reading the history books. But there is something to be said there for the fact that he is kind of stilted or uncomfortable. And that nervousness has extended into the ways that we watch him behave on TV.
Yes.
Contrast that with Emily on this episode, where it was a reversal because she is uncomfortable. She is nervous about the idea of a religious experience, a religious connection. And in that space, as you said, their roles changed. It was a role reversal where he was the one who said, this is how I feel and I am comfortable.
Yeah.
Maybe religion for Shane, among other things, is the thing that makes him feel the most connected, comfortable, at home. And that is the thing that Emily, I don't know if it's the biggest thing, but it is a large part of, as she said, some discomfort, confusion, unease, nervousness, fear that she's passing along a lack of religious understanding to her child, or wanting to maybe seeing a disconnection about to happen with her kid and being nervous about the fact that her kid might understand something that she does not. If for all of these reasons, I just thought it was incredibly interesting.
Yeah.
And empathized with both of them. Both of them.
It did speak volumes to me about what else is there for him. That his response to her was so sincere, that he left her the space for what she is experiencing about it.
Yeah.
Because we've definitely been exposed to him as someone with an aggressive quip is his mm-hmm. response to most things. And the mm-hmm. fact that he didn't in this space, I think demonstrated, he definitely had one of the worst versions of like first season husband.
100%.
That the vast majority of men are never prepared for what the show is. We're watching it happen now with shirtless Ryan, Dr. Jen's husband, you know, where he's like, why are we talking about this weirdly on camera? That thing that always mm-hmm. happens to husbands, and some of them handle it well and some of them don't. But yeah, I just love this scene. I thought it was really special. And that it happened in the same episode as like Heather running out of a party at her own house and Emily storming out of a mausoleum. That, you know, the range of this episode, the renaissance of Orange County, because I came to Orange County late. I came to Orange County because of the People's Couch. I never watched Orange County. I joined Housewives through New Jersey and the table flip. Like, I watched that reunion and then picked up New York. But it was several years before I joined Orange County. Like, I missed most of Gretchen, if that puts it in perspective of where I joined. Although Gretchen and I are both alumni of Baylor University. You're welcome. We were there at the same time. But so I came sort of... yes.
Did you know her?
No. We did figure out what sorority she was in, and I knew people in it, but I didn't know her. It was the two of us and Joanna Gaines, of Chip and Joanna Gaines, all at Baylor University at the same time. Our illustrious reality television alumni association.
The Holy Trinity. Uh-huh. The Holy Trinity.
One of these things is not like the other. it's fine. I came to Orange County late, and so I am really, really loving what's happening here.
And can we just take a moment?
Oh, yes.
How do we feel about the new Housewives?
How
do we feel about Bronwyn? Oh my God.
How do we feel about Bronwyn's friends? That they are both connected to Bronwyn and on the show without her. Dr. Jen, like, I get what's going on there. I'm yet to see anything interesting. It feels like I see elements of other Housewives where I'm like, yeah, I get it. It's a little Carrie mm-hmm. Duber. It's a little, you know, like Married to Medicine, Orange County mm-hmm. might have been the better direction for her. I'm less mm-hmm. interested there and hoping for more. Noella, I'm fascinated. Can't wait. First of all, the woman is drop dead gorgeous. It is bonkers. Stunning. The way she, like, her wandering around with the butterfly ponytail going like, what is happening? Is this what we do here on this show? Hi, Shannon. I'll be your friend, because what is happening here? The degree to which she's like fun and free about sexuality is fun to me, because that feels very not Orange County, even though we've seen it other places. I do know some of the spoiler alert of like where her personal journey is going that we're going to see.
I mean, I think we've all read about it.
And so like that, is sad because I enjoy, yeah. I enjoy the sort of joyful energy she brings, which I feel like has been rarer in Orange County. You know, that we've seen it some places, but the like effervescent, like, what's happening? Hi, this is me. I talk about stuff. You know, I feel like she's closer to the real version of what Bronwyn really wanted to be in her like free spirit. So I'm really excited that she's there and sort of really sad for where we know, you know, her world's going to fall apart. But I'm very drawn to her as a new energy in the show.
The moment where she said to Shannon, I will always be there for you. And before she finishes the sentence, she runs off to Kiki with Max, was an iconic moment for a new housewife. That was an iconic, and Shannon standing there like, are you, I am now literally alone in this. Are you, I couldn't even get the new housewife to pretend to give a shit.
I felt like Shannon wanted to say, wait, the way this works is I'm the veteran and you stand here while I monologue a scene to you. Like, I remember that somebody once said that the Orange County rules were so much that like new girls needed to know, don't stand between an OG and a camera. Mm-hmm. I read that. And I was like, I can definitely see Vicky and Tamara being that type. And I think Shannon was like, wait, that's the way. Wait, you don't leave me, sweetheart. I leave you. I leave scenes. Not the other way around. But also running to be like, you're bisexual. I'm bisexual too.
I don't know that Shannon has really done. I'm sure behind the scenes she has. But I don't know that she has figured out that maybe they're. Is a role for her that like, what is your personality type on the show? Are you an extrovert? Are you an introvert? Like, what's that test going to look like for you? Like, what is your personality type on this show? And more importantly, what is your presence on this show? And I feel like every season she gets confused by it where she's like, this thing isn't working out, or someone is saying I'm doing something and I'm not, or I'm really upset about what's going on in my marriage or whatever else, or I feel great. But I don't know that she's ever really developed, like, as a TV show, who am I on this? Some of it has been given to other people.
Yes.
Vicky has always been wild since the second she started, but she's referenced as the OG, which gives her a lot of power. Like, the fact that she has a lingo, a slogan, that is her identifier.
Yes.
And there is only one. Literally, the idea that there is literally only one gives her so much. With Shannon, it's like, Who are you? I know that you were the Tres Amigas and that, you know, went on for as long as it did. But like, who were you in the Tres Amigas? Because now that the Tres Amigas is gone, you are still there. But like, literally, who are you now?
Well, it's part of the what for me, it's always makes Shannon compelling is that struggle. I feel like that's Shannon's life struggle. Who am I? Because it changes in different situations with different people. I'm never quite who I think I want to be. I love and adore Shannon for the like fun. Shannon is one of the funnest things on Housewives television.
So fun.
Like genuinely, like the woman so who dresses fun. Up as Bret Michaels to go to a party because she was an 80s rocker chick. Who also has had genuinely horrible things happen to her that were not her responsibility. Amanda did terrible things to her. Mm-hmm. And watching her survive and thrive beyond those things. Part of the blessing and curse of Shannon is that who she is changes every year with her life. And so she always has a thought of who she is, and it's never what actually happens. I do think she saw this season the opportunity of like, it's me and Heather. We'll get past the stuff from the past and we'll be the two strong leading characters at the center of the show. And oh my God, that fell apart at our first big function. Fuck.
And she's so optimistic for someone who is in such pain constantly.
Yes.
And I don't mean that in a critical way.
Yes.
She's just so vulnerable. She's so open, which means that brokenness just always comes pouring out. She can't help but express it, or we can't help but see it, maybe. I don't know. It's so complicated.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah.
But with Shannon, it's like, I think you had hopes or expectations or nervousness or whatever. And I just don't know. Did we have a plan B here?
No. Oh, you know definitely not. Like, definitely not.
When has plan A ever worked
I know.
For you in any season?
Yes.
When, give me one, a single season.
Not once.
When?
Not once. I still think, like, one of the saddest moments in all of Housewives to me is at the Orange County reunion when Vicky and Tamra did their hug and Shannon went,
oh.
And you could see Shannon's brain go.
She had a plan. She didn't know how to react to an update.
But no, you could see the like, I have to do it too, and I don't want to. It will be them against me. And she didn't want to. And the like, the way in which she gave into that moment, I thought, you know, I wish for her that she hadn't, you know, that she had stood there and said, no, I was on your side. I defended you. I was with you through it. And you treated me worse than anyone else. And I'm not just giving in to you because we are standing here on your reunion, you know?
And the addition to that, which I totally agree with, is Shannon doesn't understand why that choice was one. Like, that was a choice that you made, but you still then need to live in the, but this person did a lot of stuff. And it's like, wait, but you just made a choice. You can be upset about the choice that precedes that and how that changed your dynamic, your strategy, your conversations. But like, you then made a choice not to stand your ground. So what does that look? I feel like so often Shannon's present is as a reaction and frustration to what directly preceded in her past, where it's like, but you let us not take away all of your autonomy. You made a choice. Maybe it was a bad one.
Right.
But you did make a choice. So like, we're constantly living in this space of what the badness that just happened, because there's always going to be badness. There's just, there just is.
Yes.
I love her. My queen.
Yes.
My, when she laughs at her own jokes.
Oh.
When she giggles.
I feel so seen by that.
Kidding?
Yes.
I delight in so much of Shannon. It's not an ironic kind of love, but there is some concern there.
Yeah.
There is, I don't know that how much hope there is. There's pleasure and presence and just a little observant concern.
Yeah. I think that's like fair and what happens. But it's also like why she is such a joy to root for and to watch. You know, it's interesting that
and
like
a drag for a lot of people and a drag.
Yes, absolutely. Because like the frustration that comes, but it's why you're good television too. When we look at the like exhausting the OGs and the stories they have to tell, it's why Shannon's permanently on the list of I'm like, nope, nope. What's she going to do? What's going to happen? Because you never know where it's going to go.
You just don't know. And the way that we were in as a housewife, I mean, there's so many. I would put Ramona in that book, but I'm going to take that back. But like in the terms of like where this person is now versus where they once were. And so often that has to do with a person's marriage and their idea of family and the actual literal family dynamics.
Yeah.
Like she's just in a much different space than the mega mansion, but run with green technology, $13 million basketball court, Shannon, that we saw. She's just in a different spot as Ramona has been over the course of several seasons, where you can tell she's lost her footing. And a lot of it had to do with a divorce. Like a divorce can be, and is for many people, a huge fracture in the idea of the life you thought you committed to with another person. And often it's not by your choice.
Yep.
And that takes a lot of wind out of the sails.
Yes.
Like, maybe that was who Shannon identified with, and she's not able to come to terms with the fact that that identity is no longer available.
Yeah.
Not in the way it was.
Yeah.
It wasn't working out.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, there's a lot of nuance there, a lot of complication. Love her so much. My sweet, sweet angel.
You know, and we grieve certain kinds of things forever. And that's okay too.
Yes.
Oh, but wait.
Yes. That's a great point. I love that point.
Another like hard turn, because it's also why like I'm fine with Nicole like disappearing from the show. I want to be careful stepping into this subject. But since it happened on both shows this week, Nicole weaponizing Emily's size in their argument happening days after Mary did the same thing to Heather is such a giant moment once again for like weaponizing body issues. And it really struck me because it happened in back-to-back episodes. Like it happened in my watches like twice this week in ways that both was sort of like moved past instantly. This like reaching for that as a weapon. You know, I love a fight. I love a dirty fight. I love a nonsense fight. I love an overreaction. I hate that as a weapon of choice. And I just felt like That is, I was like, oh, you're that kind of person. You know, like you can call, there's so many names you can call people. There's so many things you can say about what somebody's wearing or what they, you know, whatever, the life choices they've made to get away from like the laziest reinforcement of that as something about someone to attack.
I mean, it comes from such a, not even just like such a dearth of like empathy or understanding, but it's just so commonplace.
Yes.
It's like, that's just such a common.
Yes.
And I mean that in the most critical, you're yes. just being so common in reaching
yes.
for the lowest possible fruit on that tree.
Yeah.
Do trees grow fruit? Yes, they do.
Yes.
Thank
that
you
is
so
where
much.
They usually
very
grow.
Good. It's, that is a technical part of science.
The low hanging fruit. That's exactly. Yep. We're on the.
I mean, talk about nine fucking lemons. What Nicole did in that moment, as what Mary did in calling Heather chubby, was to say, I'm going to tell you that your body is not enough and that
yes.
you have something to be ashamed about. And
yeah.
if you don't feel that way, I'm certainly going to make sure you know that,
that
other
I,
people
that
do.
I think that. That I think it is something about you to be judged as unworthy, as like, yeah, it's just... It's so exhausting, but we're talking about because it's so pervasive, you know, it's that, mm-hmm. it's like the insults that are still sort of the more acceptable level, you know, it's like when we talk about the other things, Mary's comment about Mexicans, like there are other things that we really, really react big to, and that mm-hmm. it's still such a commonly reached for insults as a result of like cultural values and standards that it's absurd.
Yeah, and I think it's going to come up definitely both of those aspects, the comment that the terrible things that Mary said on SLC in that comment about quote unquote Mexicans.
Yeah.
It was just really ugly.
Yes.
And it will absolutely come up on the reunion. I'm sure it'll come up in the rest of the season, which is something that Lisa Barlow has intimated online.
Okay.
And the attempt at body shaming, is specifically fat shaming Heather,
yeah.
will certainly come up in the reunion. I don't know if the Nicole stuff is going to come up with Emily, but it's just a good thing to say, to acknowledge and call out, you know? And I hope that Emily, you know, I don't know what to say there. I just hope that she didn't feel, because we've seen how vulnerable she has been
yeah.
about matters having to do with how she feels about her body.
Yeah.
And I hope that it wasn't, wounding for her.
Yeah. Well, and if Nicole's not on the show and like, great. And, but I also am trying to be more conscious as a man, as an extremely thin man.
That.
So, but it really hit me because they happened so close together. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's like, wow, this passing comment on one show, this passing comment on the other show. And then the fight went past it anyway. And I feel like it's important that we all talk about, because Emily's talked very specifically about how that kind of commentary from social media, you know, it's not just
yeah.
the like the typical hate people get and overreactive fans on anything, but that specifically being an issue that she has dealt with and dealing with other people. That all of us being conscious every time those things happen of like consciously stating that's not acceptable.
You know what else is not acceptable? The fact that Emily has me on block.
Oh, does she really? Why would that happen?
It's really upsetting. Apparently she does like an auto block for people.
Okay.
And I would never at some
right.
comment on something. Didn't do it before Andy's Girls 800 years ago. Don't do it now. I might be a little sassy about like yada yada. I have left some things on Ramona's that's like a wink, but it's like not even a wink to like the terrible thing she's doing on the show,
right.
but it's like nowhere near what other people and what's left. And she blocked me on something having to do with a difference in political views and just did a straight block. And it's so unfortunate because Orange County and her time in Orange County, what better example of the fact that so often politics defines us and we have a habit of dehumanizing the other person. And yet there's so much of Emily that I love and would love to explore, you know?
Yes. Oh, that is so traumatizing too, because
I know,
you are.
I want her. I need to tell her how much I appreciate what she's talking about. If
yes.
Bronwyn blocked me and then unblocked me, and that there was more of a reason, to be honest. But like, if you know, I really, Emily.
Yeah.
If you're listening, which of course you're not. If anybody has contacted Emily, let her know that like this is America. This is a time where I can say, Emily, I'm not going to get into a conversation with you about like, you know, stuff from 2016, 2020. Like, but I want to get into a conversation with you about your journey, because there's more of you than this.
Yes.
There is more to you than that.
Yes.
And it's so important. It's so important for me to understand that and recognize that in myself. Like, there is more to Emily than that. Like, we're all so judgmental, and some of that comes from a really important place. Like, and some of that comes from a place of boundaries and of an anger, yes, of expression. And
yep,
a lot of that critique is deserved. A lot of it's based on like stuff that she said publicly.
Right.
You know, like, if,
yes,
I don't know, Emily, you said it in an interview. I don't know what to tell you.
Right. Like, I didn't come to your house.
I didn't come to your house, Emily. I don't know, right, where you live. Like, but also, like, there are other aspects, and I just think she's having such a gangbuster season. Also, she looked hot AF at Heather's. We need to discuss,
I mean,
that dress. She is, and Gina,
yes,
are you fucking kidding me?
Welcome, stunning, welcome, stunners, all of the applause. But also, like, I mean, the two of
bless
them
that glam,
really
bless
thriving
that
in the franchise, like, really embracing all aspects of being a housewife and what it means. Also, like, I, my whole life, have been a sucker for a woman with a high pony that is, like, fluffed. You know, like, you
okay,
have...
but you made fun of Shannon's. Let's go back to,
oh,
that.
No, no. Shannon's was, like, the additional...
curled?
The additional pile.
The piece.
Yeah, okay, the additional, like the adorable little Lhasa Apso or whatever it was that was placed on the top was, I appreciate it because it felt like the 80s thing that she loves. But I do, like, a woman with, like, I love a long hair. I love hair that you can do hairography with. And I love a high pony in a high fashion dress moment. I do. I just, one of my favorite things. And Emily running and swinging and yelling her way out the front door. I was like, you, welcome to full housewifedom status. I'm excited to see you thrive.
And her barking at Gina, like, Gina is an accessory or an assistant, which,
yes,
I don't know, maybe she is in some aspects of their relationship, which I'd love to unpack because we have seen that on previous seasons. But,
yes,
like, her being like, we're leaving, like, whatever it was. Iconic, an iconic deliver, an iconic,
yes,
order.
And well, and also,
I love a fascist housewife. That we're, hello, I'm like the owner here of this scenario. I love it.
And
I love
them now doing the very thing they were complaining about, like Vicky and Tamra doing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they
love it.
They
love
clung
to
each other because they were being treated that way. Now you've graduated to being that person. All love. Life is a circle, Ouroborosing our way. We are eating our tail through the housewives universe.
Gina, you're going to get a lot of attention this season, and it's 99% praise, and you deserve it, girl. We,
yes,
have been through the journey.
Yes.
As covered by Watch What Happens, one,
yes,
of the best Mazel of the Days,
absolutely,
in history.
Yes.
Congratulating her hair.
On the hair
on
survival
on journey.
Journey. Yes.
And now being not just not terrible, but now being good.
Yes.
Okay? You deserve it, girl.
Yes.
I am here for you. It's,
yes,
like Michelle Obama, like, yeah, blah, 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 whatever she said about Beyonce. Like, you are having a moment, Queen,
oh,
G, and I'm so happy for you. But Emily, I want to have you on Andy's Girls.
Yes.
There are housewives who have said yes, who I have not scheduled. Emily, I want to make let us connect and talk to each other. You are so interesting. I love the conversation you've had. If someone can pass along a timestamp to,
please,
Emily and let her know, I'm not going to because I don't have access.
I'm no longer
access to Emily's
able.
I just, Emily, want to say that I'm here for this. And what does that say as a stan of Shan and a historic stanner of,
yes,
Shanner, that I am saying Emily Simpson before I even said Shannon?
Yeah.
Have I even invited? I don't know.
Have you ever? Have you not been like, Shannon,
no,
please
I went to
come.
Drinks with her. I went to drinks with her after a recording of AG. Because friend of the pod who is directing Lou's Christmas tour, Richard J. Alexander, after a recording, he said, guess where I'm going? And I was like, where? And he's like, to have drinks with Shannon. And I literally instinctively said, cool, I am coming with you.
Yep.
And then I made him call and make sure it was okay for me to come. And I, like, obviously there are people who do blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, that's great and whatever, blah, blah. But I truly, gutturally was like, Richard, I do not care how you respond to this. It is happening.
Make it
I am
happen.
Coming with you.
Yes.
She is my queen. She is my angel. And we had like an hour plus at a hotel I won't name because I think she stays there.
Right.
And just like me looking at her, because it's like, how many questions can you? I can only start with 1,000 questions. For my queen, my Shan.
This fun house mirror experience.
Shan, right, but even before I say Shan, come on, AG, I'm saying Emily Simpson. Listen, I love you. Maybe I don't know if I believe that, but I really like you.
Yes,
and I feel such support for you, and I've stood for you during that scale thing a couple years ago.
Yes.
I said that's not okay, and we need to understand her vulnerability and bravery, and I don't love the production's decision to include stuff when she's obviously experiencing discomfort. Like, come on. On the scale of friendship, my friend, like, come on, let's get on that scale together.
We'll get on it together.
Girl, let's talk.
Honey,
let's talk. Love you so much. It'll be a safe, the Andy Scrolls is a safe space. Uh-huh. Andy Scrolls is a safe space. I can't believe I spent 35 minutes talking about Emily Simpson. Will you come on, Andy? I could literally just email someone and then get denied, but maybe this will be more.
It's way more fun and impactful. Look, it is a public plea. You are being vulnerable in front of our public, in front of the amazing Andy Scrolls listeners who are like the smartest fans.
Anybody work with her at her party planning business, which we heard about the first season and never again?
Is somebody a paralegal?
If she still practices law, now Shane's able to. So, like, come on.
Also, Gina's, like, short joke about Shane passing the bar. But it also shows how much they all are really friends, that, like, she enjoyed so viscerally being able to make that joke. I love them. I love this group.
Wait, was that a short joke? I thought it was a joke about him, them just lowering the bar so that he would pass it, in the sense that, like, he wouldn't have literally been a lawyer otherwise.
I know, but I felt like it was legitimately both. I felt like that's why she enjoyed it so much. She was had to lower the bar for him to get over it.
I totally didn't think that had anything to do with his size. Maybe. I thought it had to do with the fact that he's failed so many times, which, again, Emily, is not a critique. Not a critique of your husband who, you know, is your husband. Not a critique.
It seemed clear from Emily's delivery that she also enjoyed it a little bit.
Okay. Of course, because it's funny.
Yes, it is.
He failed so many times, and we can find some humor in that.
You do. It's like, for me, when there's like an athletic thing, and they're like, we're going to lower the ball, like literally anything. They're like, it's fine. You can just throw the ball like 10 feet. You know, like lower. Yeah, it's hilarious no matter what. And
JFK
he succeeded.
JFK Jr. failed a couple times.
Yeah.
Okay. And they didn't lower the bar for him.
Yeah.
And he was able to pass. And so it turns out was Shane.
Yeah.
And I love, this is our new Kennedy dynasty.
Correct.
Is the Simpsons family on Orange County.
You never know. You never know with your attorney if they passed it with flying colors or if they barely got there. You don't know with your doctors. Did they get all D's? Who knows? Like, you never know. Like, a pass is a pass.
Does Emily still practice law? I'd love to ask her, but that chance is probably never going to happen.
Emily, when you come on the show.
When you, can you bring your law certificates?
We have questions about your current practice.
Emily, listen, as I said in Brian Moylan's book, I don't know that I believe in God, but I have faith in the Real Housewives. Emily Simpson, I have faith in us and our imaginary estrangement, which is also technically literal, coming apart as we come together.
Yes.
As one, join me on the people's couch. I'm recording from my clawfist. You will feel comfortable with all of the delightful dresses that surround me in my background.
Correct.
Come on, girl. Let's have it. Let's have a moment. Let's have
a
moment.
Yes. Yes, Emily. Great.
Emerson Collins. We didn't even talk about Salt Lake City.
And I know.
This with Potomac. It's like I'm almost... What's that thing that's not? Oh my God! I swear to God, I've read a book. Oh, I'm extorting you. It's not that I'm blackmailing. I'm doing a slight extortion by saying we ran out of time, so I guess you have to come back ASAP to discuss it.
And for all of you, I'm not kidding. I love you all and your and the people that listen here, and I love your show so much. I will come back anytime because genuinely, I mean, the just my Cliff Notes overview till we get to do it and think. The fact that every episode of Salt Lake City manages to outdo the previous one, I don't even understand how they're achieving the television, the reality television they are achieving. I am doing a destination Christmas to Colorado Springs with my family. We Airbnb'd a house just to go to a different place. My mom,
so nice.
Because of like health issues, can't get the vaccine. So yes, she has to be very careful because oral, blah, blah, blah. But so like driving from their house in Texas to this one other house where, you know, safely. But I have planned our drive just so I can drive through Vail. Now, I can't afford to eat at any establishment there. And it's fine because they basically never left the house except for Heather's, right, like, reconciliation dinner luncheon with the Giardelli chocolate. Which I'm like, I might find that patio to go to. But I'm driving through Vail just to be in the space where they made some of the best reality television of all time. The unhinged things that happened in Vail that have nothing to do with the Jen Shah of it all. I mean, that you all made an episode where you didn't even discuss her that was as good as the one where Whitney Rose demonstrated that she is the smartest, most perceptive.
Yes!
Like, she Megan King Edmonds'd her way into, like, understanding everything about, mm-hmm, the fraud of it all, and then also demonstrating she is the one of the most perceptive housewives of it all in her continuous takedown of Lisa Barlow's community theater attempt to be Lisa Vanderpump. Like, the genius of Whitney Rose. Like, can you all hear in my voice the degree to which there is so much iconic behavior happening? I love it all.
Okay, you're going to need to come back, like, literally this month. Like,
yeah,
we're gonna
that's fine.
Have a sidebar conversation, because we need to have a Salt Lake City-specific episode.
Yeah, because
we need to have a Salt Lake City-specific episode, you and I. It needs to happen.
I have no job at all the time. I will come back whenever. I adore you.
I'm COVID-employed, yep, no job, whenever. Yep. Literally nothing but time, and yet I'm constantly running out of it. But I... it's going to happen. It's got to happen.
My one real thing, I will actually tell you, but the Del Shores Foundation, my producing partner, work husband, Del Shores, that I produce all his work, we started a foundation pre-COVID that is back working. We are running a writer search specifically for LGBTQ plus Southern writers of plays, screenplays, short films, and web series. There are cash awards. We're giving production grants to help the writers that win get their work produced. That is actually my baby that I'm putting out into the world right now, sort of paying forward the opportunities that have been given to us. If you want more information on that, DelShoresFoundation.org. The writer search runs till the end of the year, but spoiler alert, I'm going to extend it to the end of January. So if you know any Southern LGBTQ plus writers of plays and screenplays, send them my way. That is my real work, baby. I forgot that I should talk about, that I'm very proud of.
I love that. And we're going to include a link for more information in the show notes for this episode to make it as easy as humanly possible for people to share it, talk about it, post it on social media. Even if you yourself are not in thinking about being considered for this, someone you know probably is.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things where social media, listen, it took me away from Emily for hopefully a temporary amount of
for
time.
For a temporary ban.
There are other ways that doesn't temporary. Just a little, I'm thinking of it as a little pause. A little pause.
That's correct.
A little, but this
you're
is
on a, break.
A good example. Of
you're on a break. That's all.
We're
you're
on
just
a break.
On a break.
But you know what? Much like Rachel and Ross, maybe she'll forget what a break means.
Yes.
And maybe we'll be able to come back together.
Correct.
And that's a sweeps experience.
Yes.
Is all I have to say. Listen, Emerson Collins, I could talk to you forever. We are literally going to be scheduling Salt Lake City specific because, I mean, you drop a bomb like Lisa Barlow running a community theater version of LVP, and I've just got to pick up those pieces the rest of my life and try to work through the fact that I didn't ask you any follow-ups.
Uh-huh, perfect.
We're coming back.
Yes.
I die for you. Where can people follow you?
Yes.
Talk to you? See your work,
yes.
Watch your movies,
yes.
Go to your shows, tell us everything.
You can find all the information about my actual jobs that I'm proud of on my website, emersoncollins.com. But for nonsense and shenanigans, on Instagram, it's at Emerson Collins. And on Twitter, I haven't been tweeting much the last couple of years, but I do pay attention a lot, at actually Emerson. So you can share your thoughts, scream, bring your joy, whatever is on your brain.
I love that. And guys, speaking of things on brains, couple of episodes on the Patreon for you to listen to and love. Salt Lake City. Oh my God, I did not actually mean that. Sex in the City recap episode featuring many of your thoughts and feelings, including which AGs identify with which sex. I keep on calling it Salt Lake City. Oh my God. And just like that, Salt Lake City. Sex in the City characters you identify with is
Ooh,
up
yes.
on the Patreon.
Yes.
The number one way to support Andy's girls, including myself, and a couple bonus episodes en route to the Patreon, patreon.com/Andy's girls. And also, last episode featured friend of the show, Gabrielle Bluestone, offering AGs a chance to receive one of Tom Girardi's best lawyer, etc. awards. And it's happening.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
It's happening. And guys, I just can't say it enough. You better sage the fuck out of it, okay? If you are the winner. Gonna be doing a trivia contest on my Instagram stories. I'll put the rules on there. I think it's gonna be like whoever responds first with all the right answers. It's gonna be a combo, I think, of Housewives trivia and AG trivia. First person that responds wins. The hope is that you are able to send it to somebody in the continental United States.
Yeah,
and then they
please
can send it to you if you are an international AG. So look for that this Sunday on Instagram, the name of the social media engine. I did not just forget. At Dame Galley. And, you know, stay tuned for more. We're going to do a little SLC special.
Woohoo!
And just like that.
Yes!
That'll happen. Guys, I hope in the meantime you are all staying safe, staying sane, getting vaccinated, boosted if you can. And we will talk to you soon here on the People's
Couch.
People's
Couch! Yay!
Goodbye, guys.